Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Hi, excuse me.
Oh, hi.
I'm Dan Rydell. They said you wanted to see me?
Yes, yes, I do. Hi, I'm Mallory Moss. I just started this week, so please pardon the mess.
That's fine. Look, there's a revolving door here on business affairs, and I go through this with all the new people. My out-of-town expense sheets tend to be a little unusual.
Yes, I noticed, but that's not the problem.
What's the problem?
During your broadcast on September 5th, you sang happy birthday to your partner, Casey McCall.
Yeah, but I can explain that. Wait, it was his birthday. Why do I have to explain that?
You sang happy birthday on the air?
Dana cleared it.
Who's Dana?
Dana Whitaker's the producer of the show.
Oh, yes. Well, my predecessor didn't clear it.
Who's your predecessor?
Marty Sheinbaum.
Who's Marty Sheinbaum?
My predecessor.
Look, I don't have a whole lot of time,
listen,
so...
I think it's sweet that you and your partner sing to each other on television. Others may think it's vaguely gay, but I disagree.
Thank you.
Nonetheless, you can't do it anymore.
Why not?
It's against the law.
It's against the law to be vaguely gay?
It's against the law to sing happy birthday on television.
That doesn't sound quite right to me.
It is.
You went to law school and everything, right?
Yeah.
You took the bar?
3 times.
It's against the law to sing happy birthday on television.
Federal copyright law.
Happy birthday is protected material.
Yes.
Who holds the copyright to happy birthday?
The representatives of Mildred and Patty Hill.
Mildred and Patty Hill?
The authors.
The authors.
They wrote it.
They wrote the song.
Did you think that song just happened?
Well, yeah.
It didn't.
Let them learn.
Yes, indeed.
Would they be happy with an autographed hat?
Yes, they would.
Great.
Along with $2,500.
I'm sorry?
They've billed the network $2,500.
$2,500 to sing happy birthday?
Yes.
Ouch.
Intellectual property, droit moral, fair use, royalty structure. These things may not mean anything to you, but I assure you they mean a great deal to me, and they meant a great deal to my predecessor.
Marty Sheinbaum.
Marty Sheinbaum.
You know what? From now on, I'm only singing songs in the public domain.
That'll teach them.
I'm not kidding.
Go knock them dead.
Well, another year has come and gone. So grab your party hat and put that on. We're gonna drink a lot of beer and smoke a lot of pot. And if you're supposed to work tomorrow, better call and tell them to off. Happy birthday to you. Hope you get some action, drink until you spew. Happy birthday to you. Well, we're gonna go out and hit every bar. All your drinks are on the house, yeah, you're the star. Get all drunk and rowdy, gonna turn some heads. Gonna party down so hard, we're gonna tear this down to shreds. Happy birthday to you. All your friends are here and your family too. Hope you get some action, drink until you spew. Happy birthday to you. I said happy birthday to you.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of September in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for laughter and amusements. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, September 24th, 2010. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming to you from high above the milkpacking district here in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, the crown jewel of the Northwest. It is 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today. 503-505-6964. 6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, comments, kvetches, ruminations, ponderings of an ironic or amusing nature, whatever it is you might have. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor, the birthday girl, can be reached at D-A-W-N, dawn@rickemerson.com. The text box is also up and running and fully functional, I say, not knowing if that's actually the case.
It is indeed.
Fantastic. That's at rickemerson.com, the website, and so forth. Coming up today, Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, also Stupid Criminal of the Week. I'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Because here's the thing, improbably enough, even at 2.5 minutes in length, that Sports Night clip that I just played at the beginning does not actually come close to explaining the tangled saga of the song Happy Birthday. So, we actually had this submitted to us by a listener. Listener Todd wants to know, why is it the song Happy Birthday in the public domain? So we will address that later on this hour as part of Pop Culture Authority. Why is the song Happy Birthday not in the public domain? What else do we have coming up? Our good friend Big Jim Willig is going to be in the studio with us later on, around 2 o'clock or so. He's got a performance coming up tomorrow night, Saturday. So we'll talk to Big Jim later on, about 35 minutes from now. In addition to all of this, though it doesn't seem possible that we could cram more into a single program, Dawn Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
A House hearing takes a closer look at a head injury protection bill. A reality show star is annoyed at Burger King for its scurrilous remarks about pit bulls. And according to ABC TV, Portland is Pornland.
I'm sorry, according to who, Portland is what?
ABC. ABC's Nightline calls Portland Pornland.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. All right. It is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. Also, to my right, we've had this box of stuff from Think Geek sitting here.
Yes,
I don't know,
we do.
For like, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, something like that. Because we get the box of... there's just too many things to deal with every single day here. We almost need some sort of secondary channel on which we can just get to all of the things that were not gotten to during the primary program. And this show itself contains a lot of things that we didn't get to during Legion of News. So it just becomes a whole... Just becomes a boggle of, and there's bags of kangaroo jerky sitting on the desk, and it's just
chaos.
It is. It's a cosmic vapor of obligations and inventive amusements, like half of whom are gotten to it any particular day. It's 503-505-6964, however, and that means that we are endeavoring to plunge on into today's program, try to get as much of this stuff done as possible. Something amusing?
Someone said happy birthday to me, and I said thanks.
Are you being wished a happy birthday, too, by any number of the audience members? Those
I
who
am.
Are not offering to come clean your house in the nude?
Yes.
Share with the people what you were offered. Just, was this today or was it yesterday?
This came last night in my email.
Now, was it just the one submission, or was it multiple submissions over the course of multiple days? Or is it multiple submissions from the same guy?
It was just one submission from this fellow, because we have been offering... these sort of grant of we're soliciting that people send us in why they should get a month free of
this is the Emerson grant,
the Emerson show. Yes. It's aimed at a Legion of News listeners who do not subscribe currently, or who know someone who doesn't subscribe and would like to get it. And I got this email from this fellow that said what I would do for 32 cents a day, and I opened the email and it said that I'd like to cook and clean for Dawn, naked. And he included a photograph he took of himself in a mirror. It's one of those pictures of the guy holding his little phone camera or whatever it is. And he's standing there wearing nothing but a towel.
Now, did he know it was going to you?
Oh, yes. He emailed it directly to dawn@rickemerson.com.
The funny thing is that he referred to you. It wasn't even like he referred to you like in the second person. He referred to you in the third person altogether, even though you were the recipient of the email.
Let me see where it is, because it was very short. I mean, it wasn't like there was a lot to it, but it was anyway. No, that could have gone in a
So he said,
direction.
I want to cook and clean, or I want to...
Well, here, let me find it in a minute. Here it is. What I will do for 32 cents a day, and then the email says, I will cook and clean for you, Dawn, naked. And then there's a photograph of him.
All right, can I see the the aforementioned photograph?
Let me open that up.
Is this a nude photo or is it just?
No, he's wearing a towel. But I guess he wants me to see, like, you know, that it would be worth my while to have him prancing about my home without any clothes on.
That it would be aesthetically pleasing were he to. Wow. Okay.
I mean, he's in shape.
And he's in shape and appears to be heavily tattooed.
Yes.
All right.
Which, you know, but the thing is, I can't tell from this photo. He's looking at the camera while he's taking the photo, so I can't tell if he has crazy eyes or not. His bathroom looks clean, and that's a point for him if he wants to come clean for me.
It almost looks like a public bathroom. It almost looks as though he's taking the photograph. Not a public bathroom as such, but like
at
maybe
the gym,
or like at your office. It almost looks like, you know, because we've got a shower here.
That would be disturbing if the photo was being taken in the bathroom right across the hall.
And the calls are coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
It almost looks like he was taking the photo like in some sort of a shared bathroom, like at a college or something. And so he's offering. So this isn't like a birthday thing. This is an Emerson Grant thing where
because we basically
said to people is, you know, leave a voicemail or send us a limerick or a haiku or something explaining why you deserve a 1 month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. And his whole thing was like, I'm not going to write you a haiku, but I will just come and I'll just show you my penis while I clean your house.
And then when we did Legion of News in the previous hour, he was listening and he was in the text box and some mention of my birthday. And I don't know if he was referencing my birthday or if he was referencing his email, but he did say something. He offered to strip. So apparently he just wants to take his clothes off in front of me.
You mean to come strip here or like at your house?
He just said strip and just strip. I could strip for Dawn, you know, and then I just went clothes and I went away because apparently this guy just, I don't know.
Did you acknowledge the offer in any way?
No, I didn't think that was
see, well, that's why. That's why he's continuing. Well, see, but this is why he's continuing to bring it up.
I'm not sure how to respond to something like this, honestly.
Well, you could say, is it an offer? Well, there's two different offers happening here. There's the guy offering to come, and it is cooking as well. It's not
he
just cleaning.
He said cook and clean.
He's cooking and cleaning in the nude. I wonder if the nudity is a requirement. Like, if you just said, look, maybe you could just come cook and clean, you could just wear something that was flattering to your physique, but maybe covering.
There are people that are into that, though. I mean, I remember seeing ads in the back of Willamette Week with guys saying that they would like to come to someone's house and be bossed around while they cooked and cleaned, either naked or wearing, like, a sissy girl French maid's uniform or something like that. And I have to admit, I did actually think about it, because, I mean, you know, hey, it's free cleaning, and all I have to do is just like be a little bit mean to the guy while he's naked. I could do that.
That seems like it's less about the guy actually wanting to clean, and more about the guy just wanting to be a bad little girl while you tell him, you know, work faster.
But either way, I get a clean bathroom.
Well, I suppose that's true.
So it all works out well for me.
I guess this is another fundamental difference between men and women, because those ads, you'll see those ads run a lot actually from women who are offering to come, you know, and just like clean your place in the all together, in the buff. But there's never any mention there of like, and you can berate me the entire time. Because there's really, you know, most of the guys who want that done are just guys who A, live in some pigsty, and B, would just like to see like a naked chick coming and like doing their, you know, windows of their floor or something.
My first husband's brother is gay. And I remember he got, I saw some, one of these sort of local gay alternative newspapers in his apartment. And I was looking through the ads for that. And I found a whole bunch of ads for guys offering naked haircuts. Like they'll come over and cut your hair naked. And I was like, is this some kind of a thing? Is this sort of a fetish? And then years later, I discovered that I think it's actually sort of like...
Doing
massage. Yeah. You're getting paid for the haircut.
Yeah, everything else is a bonus.
Right.
Yeah, that's the...
I thought maybe there was just apparently some huge widespread fetish that gay guys had about getting their haircut by naked people. But I don't think so. I think it was just a way to get around the whole getting paid for stuff thing.
Which never works, by the way. That's one of those things that's like, I think everybody who's ever gotten busted for prostitution, that's the thing you always hear. They go, well, he was just paying me for my time. The sex was optional, which is, you know, it was a transparent falsehood, as the court would say.
He gave me $40 for this copy of Catcher in the Rye. And then the other stuff just happened out of gratitude.
It would be my estimation, or maybe I'm wrong about this, but I suspect that I'm not, that any activity involving, unattached, but just any activity involving two mutually attracted gay men, it probably includes the, and then we effed afterward. It's like that, when you say, you know, like maybe gay guys have a fetish for having their hair cut by, you know, by some hot dude who's in the nude.
Yeah.
I think if you're a gay guy, it's not so much a fetish as it is just if you can get a side of hot man love with that, like, you'll take it. It doesn't matter what it is. Look, I'll come and I'll,
I need a haircut and a naked guy. Awesome.
You know, I'm going to come and do some rototilling, or I'm going to come and I'm going to do your 1040EZ form, or I'm going to come and I'm going to, I'm going to replace the brake badge in your car. I'm going to clean out your septic tank. Also, I will F you while I'm here. And it's like, I think the average guy would just go, hey, why not?
You don't read a lot about naked gardening because I think that would be dangerous.
Yeah, but I would imagine that there's probably a fetish about that. There probably is, actually. I would imagine there's any amount. Why should women be the only ones who have, you know, like the hot gardener who comes in and says, can I get a drink of water and also touch your tender bosoms? It is 503-505-6964. All of that is coming out. The Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, Pop Culture Authority, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here as well. And then your birthday is coming up tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And so we will all be gathering.
Today is birthday eve.
At your home for a variety of happenings.
Yeah,
it's like an all-day thing, right?
Well, kind of. I mean, if you want it to be. I mean, last year you came and you played poker and then you left because Laura was going to go see Pearl Jam. You lost.
That's right.
And then Laura had to go.
I forgot all about that. She was going to see Pearl Jam with Aaron's wife. I completely spaced on that. So we came basically just long enough for me to give you guys my money.
And you know, you and Laura got all your money back because Laura won your money back.
Is that true? So I ended up coming in third, I think, is what you said.
Yeah, but all Laura, right. But Laura came in first. So she basically won her money back and your money back.
So is there a poker game happening again tomorrow?
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Well, this time I'm just going to, I'm going to go in now with the expectation that the best I can do is just to break even. Because occasionally I will actually think that I'm going to be on a real, I'm going to be on a streak, I'm going to be on a roll, and I'm going to end up the big victor. And that never happens. And then it's just crushing disappointment. So I'm just going to just roll with the assumption that I will do no better than even, but then it's totally on her to bring home honor and money for the family.
Well, I did the Evite thing, and I sent out some Evites, and people are terrible about sending in RSVPs, so I have no idea how many people are actually showing up. So far, it's been like, I've gotten a lot of RSVPs. I'm going to be busy. I'm going to be out of town. That's great. But the people who are actually coming, they slowly have been trickling in, while I still have this huge list of people who haven't told me one way or the other, so I have no idea how many people are coming. But at one point, I believe it looked like the party was going to consist of my husband and myself, you and your wife, my friend Bobby Wiederquist, and Siegfried. And I thought, well, that's going to be a weird party.
Seriously. And by the way, I don't know how we're on the list because I never RSVP'd.
Apparently Laura RSVP'd.
I don't even think I got an invitation.
Yes, you did. And you said you got it.
Really?
Yes. I mentioned it the next day and you said, oh, yes, I got that.
Oh, I was probably just lying. I think that may have just actually gone to one of my many filters. It just takes things away before I have to see them. So
I went to a lot of trouble
To craft it. I did see it. It was beautiful. It was one of the finer invitations I've received this year.
What was it a picture of?
I have no idea.
It was a bear driving a train.
Because why wouldn't it be? All right. Well, that was going to be my guess anyway.
Of course it was.
That's not really important, Dom. What's important is that my wife RSVP'd.
Yeah.
She handled all of that, so that I didn't have to be bothered with it. And that we'll be there tomorrow.
I'm surprised you didn't have Cheryl do it.
No, I've got all my work divided up. Everything goes into a discrete pile. I've got basically five women that handle everything that needs to be done in my life. That one went to my wife.
Okay.
It's 503-505-6 because it takes away from time that I could just sit at home installing my new voice recognition software, which, by the way, I made a note to myself today. I wrote this down last night about my voice recognition software. This was last night at 11:35 p.m. when I wrote, my God, this software is simultaneously awe-inspiring and terrifying. I'm not quite sure whether I want to leave it installed or whether I want to take it out and burn it. So I was...
Did you use the Dragon software before, didn't you?
No, I was using this, this is a thing that nobody cares about but nerds, and apparently you. So I was using this software called Max Speech Dictate.
Oh, okay.
Which apparently is It was based on, you know, in software they'll talk about something being built on an engine, like a video game engine. They'll say, like the Quake engine was sort of the very core. It was the code that ran the game and that ran the physics of the game, and that other games would then build upon that. So this was built on the engine made by the Dragon Speech Company, which is a terrible name for a product. And I was so glad that I never used it because saying that you're typing something in Dragon Speech just makes it sound like you've got one of those like custom World of Warcraft keyboards. It's just nothing but macros and like pewter goblets or
but
something.
I have heard good things about that that program.
And yeah, so here's the thing. I was using Mac Speech Dictate for the longest time. In fact, if you get an email from me, most of the time it'll actually say as a signature file, like, this email, you know, was dictated and sent using Mac Speech Dictate. And then when I got my iPhone, one of the recommended applications, one of the things people have told me about it, says, oh, you got to get this dictation, you know, this voice-to-text thing for the iPhone made by Dragon. And I said, well, okay, and it's free.
And I will say I'm happy you're talking about this because that's one of the things that I was researching because, of course, I am a huge nerd this way. The iPhone that I still can't afford to buy, but I've been trying to figure out what software I'll be installing on it when I can actually afford to buy it. And so I was, like, comparing and contrasting all the different dictation software.
So you're like Mr. Blandings sort of decorating his dream house before it's actually been built.
Pretty much.
Okay. So I downloaded this Dragon, it's called Dragon Text or Dragon Talk or whatever it is, but it's this application for the iPhone and it's free, and so I put it on. And it was just like mind-blowing. It was astounding how good it was. I mean, it's a free thing that you download in like 9 seconds from the App Store, where I would just dictate a whole bunch of crap into it, and it had like, I would say, 95% accuracy, and that's with like no training, no anything. It was like right out of the virtual box. And then it was about a day and a half after that that our friend Thomas Gill forwarded me something, where that company then just like flat out acquired this Mac Speech company that was making the dictation software that I used before. Anyway, so the long and the short of it is that I just upgraded to the new, you know, like Dragon Speech for the Mac or something. And I put it on, and I'll be goddamned if it isn't the freakiest thing on earth. At one point, I was replying to an email or something. Somebody sent me something about Mad Men. And so I was just answering back like, dear guy, thanks for listening. Here are my thoughts on Mad Men. And at one point, I looked down at the page and I realized that the voice recognition software I'm using on my Mac, it actually recognized the name John Hamm. And spelled it correctly, like J-O-N space H-A-M-M. And I stopped and I looked at the screen for a while. And it was another one of those things where I just had to, like, take the headset off and just go wander around. And just go stand outside and just sort of, you know, if I smoked, I'd be a guy where I was just sort of dragging on a Pall Mall and just staring at the horizon and wondering, you know, what the world was going to look like in 10 years.
Well, I do wonder sometimes when I see that you've sent an email using the dictation thing, I'm going, but how did it know to do it in italics? Stuff like that.
Italicization, it actually can do. Some of that stuff I'll do by hand because, like, commands. We're now entering, like, the 50th minute of talking about this, but that's just going to have to be okay with everybody. Doing, like, commands, because you can actually run your computer using that dictation software and the little, like, Time Life headset thing. Because it's for, like, disabled people, too. Like, if you don't have any hands or something, you can actually say, like open email, compose email, send to Dawn.
And I have a friend who's an artist, and he very quickly got... realize that he could use that when he's doing Photoshop, Photoshop, because there are so many different like pull down menus and filters and things like that to use with Photoshop that he could program the voice recognition stuff to just go directly to the filters and things that he used the most, and then just work with a headset on, and then he could just say what it was he wanted to do, and he didn't have to keep, like, reaching over to the mouse and pulling down the menus manually.
And it just makes
saved him an enormous amount of time.
I suppose, but it also just makes you so unbelievably lazy. It's like, I can already see the future where I'm going to have, like, little useless T-Rex arms because I never actually lift my hands to do anything. So I'm sitting there. I mean, I was basically doing everything but just, like, scratching my sack, Al Bundy style. Just sitting there in an ass groove in my chair at home.
Wearing your typing boots?
Wearing my typing boots, which I no longer really need because I'm not actually typing anything because I've got my gay, like, the Commander USA headset on.
You'll have to get some dictation slippers.
Exactly, a dictation, a satin robe. Of the finest quality so that my skin doesn't chafe. During the long hours, I sit in the chair just going, open Safari, Google search, boobs, enter. Open email. Send Dawn. Tell her I'll be late at home looking at boobs. But anyway, so I realized that the software actually knows how to spell John Hamm from Mad Men. But then it becomes like a whole quest where I'm trying to stump the computer. So then I feel like... Then it's like I'm having this retarded thing where I'm just sitting in the chair feeling like some lame version of Garry Kasparov just sitting across the table from Deep Thought, just going, rook to queen's pawn five, you know, and then the machine comes right back at me over the table, you know, with knight to king's bishop, you know, four or something, and I'm just, you know, going, oh, accursed machine, I will castle, you know, and just trying to beat this thing
spell
that I will never beat.
Spell Ceausescu, I dare you.
No lie, this, as soon as I recognized John Hamm, then I started listing off, it was this thing where I wanted the voice recognition software, and here's the mind-blowing part, it cost $49. I mean, it cost less than like the USB mouse that I have for the keyboard itself. But so I started off real easily because on the one hand, I wanted the thing to impress me. But on the other hand, like, I didn't want to tax it, you know, too much right out of the gate. I wanted to build up. So I said...
And you don't want to hurt its feelings when you first started using it because it might turn on you.
And I don't want it to... I want it to remember me fondly when the machines finally rise, Maximum Overdrive style. So I said, Sarah Palin. Sure enough, it spelled Sarah Palin. I said, John McCain. And it spelled John McCain. I said, John Kerry, Joe Biden, Barack Obama. Because I figure Barack Obama is the... On the one hand, it's a difficult name. On the other hand, he's the president, so you figure maybe they programmed that. And then I decided to throw out the first serious curveball. And this is all, by the way, while I'm, you know, my wife is walking by my home office, and I've got my headset on. And if you'd looked in the office, you just would have seen me sitting there just saying, like, Sarah Palin, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, boobs. Open Safari. I mean, it just looks like I've gone insane, like I have some sort of weird who's who in the world of politics Tourette's going on. But then I just decide to throw it the first challenge, and I just say, Joe Esterhaz. And I'll be goddamned if it couldn't spell Joe Esterhaz. And as soon as I figured out that my computer, my voice recognition software could spell Joe Esterhaz, I went nuclear. I just went for the scorched earth thing, and I said, Boutros Boutros Ghali. And it spelled Boutros Boutros Ghali, and it knew to hyphenate it. That's the effed up thing about it. It was just so unbelievable. It was so great, but it was just terrifying. And so then just my final thought about this, and then so I get ready to go to bed, and I'm checking my email like an idiot before I go to bed. You know, I am one of those guys from the story where as I'm brushing my teeth, you know, rubbing the bristles over my incisors and checking my mail, you know, with the other, because I'm a lifeless dork. And Bruce Agler forwards me an email for the New York Times, and it's this software review from the New York Times about my voice recognition software. And I realized then just like what a hopeless retard I am, that not only have I spent the better part of like an hour at one point when I could have been productive actually just testing my VR software by shouting Boutros Boutros Ghali into a microphone, but that later while checking my email on my iPhone while brushing my teeth, I am reading a New York Times review of a software product that I don't need the review for because I bought it like the nanosecond it went on sale. So it is astounding that I am married or that I have any friends or any kind of social ability at all. I mean, seriously, I ought to be one of those guys who's just sitting at home playing EverQuest 9 and offering to come do a pantless vacuuming job for you. No offense. All right. He's not even listening. He doesn't have a subscription.
No.
All right.
He's a muscular fellow.
Yeah,
the talent guy.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's an EMT.
Yeah.
Because he not only offers me to come over and be naked in my house, and gives me a picture of himself, but he also has a I don't know if he knew this, but there's a his signature that automatically goes to the bottom of his email, gives me his full name, his job title, and where he works. I don't think that's a really good idea if you're sending people pictures of yourself in a towel.
And just saying, hey, I'd like to come and wave my penis around while I'm, you know, cleaning your windows or something. Are you even, on a scale of 1 to 10, well, you're not inclined at all to take him up on the nude house cleaning offer, are you?
Well, no. No.
I would think that you'd get off on that. I would think that would be a thing that would appeal to you.
It's one of those things that I would consider doing just simply so I could check that off the list.
Have muscular guy come vacuum while I stare at his buttocks.
You know, as you know, I have a lengthy list of things I have done in my life, mainly just so I could go, okay, you know, sure, never done that before.
That's been done.
And I somehow have a feeling my husband might not be as encouraging of this.
I don't see him being a jealous guy in that way.
Oh, he's not a jealous guy, but I think it would make him uncomfortable. But I think, honestly, I think if I explained to him this, like, hey, this guy wants to clean our house.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the
thing.
That he'd probably be like, well, okay.
It's a win-win, really. I mean, just for absolutely everybody. There's nobody comes out on the short side there.
Yeah. No, Patrick is totally not a jealous person, partly because he's extremely secure, and partly just because he knows, the same reason I know about him, we're both just way too lazy to ever fool around.
Also, he's got a huge member.
Well, yeah, that's
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so forth. Anyway, so that's why would you
imagine that?
He's just got the build for it.
That's true.
He's got the sort of, he's got a lanky frame.
He's a sizable fella. He's 6'2".
Yeah,
he's a good size.
I'm just saying. I mean, if I had to guess, I don't really know. But if I had to, if I had to do sort of like a, you know, like one of those police suspect sketches or something. Yeah.
Well, how big do you think his penis is?
And they, yes, exactly. But have you seen?
They ask that.
Please to describe the size of his wang, sir. And I said, well, okay. Anyway, so that was my evening. So I just if you get emails from me, you or like anybody, and it looks like I've misspelled something really obvious, because like you, I'm real anal retentive about spelling everything correctly. Like you and I've talked about the fact that even like on a Twitter post, I will actually take the time whenever possible to use full words, and I try not to use cutesy like internet abbreviations. But if you get something from me where it looks like I've used a word that not only is spelled wrong but just makes zero sense in the sentence, that is because I have probably, rather than typing it, I've just yelled it at the computer and then said send.
Well, and like I knocked off a really quick email to you the other day. I don't even remember what it was about, but I just like type really fast and sent it to you. And then later you came to me and you said, you know, et cetera is two words.
It really is.
I was like, eh, okay.
I'm just saying.
He said, well, I just thought you'd want to know. Yeah.
Well, because you know what it is? Typing et cetera is one word. That is the that is the textual equivalent of saying et cetera.
Okay.
I'm just, you know, and I'm, look, I'm just the messenger. I'm just, look, it's not like I'm Caligula or something, like I spoke the language, you know, and then I now have some, like, bent to make sure that everybody understands it. I'm just saying, it's one of those things. If you're going to use the Latin, you know, if it's like a Yiddish, you're going to bring the Yiddish, you bring it correctly. So, et cetera.
It's always good to learn new things.
That's right. You can remember because it's like et al is two words. Al, of course, being an abbreviation for Aliyah.
I think because the abbreviation of et cetera is ETC.
Yeah, which is wrong, technically.
So, then in my mind, I just assume that it's one word.
And that's a thing that I do even though I know it's incorrect. So I guess I'm no one to throw stones, Dawn. I'm in my own house made of the thinnest, sheerest glass. And so forth. All right. Well, this is where I would ask you what you did last night. But I'm not even entirely sure that you did anything last night.
No.
I
really.
Think you're just preparing for Saturday. You're just girding your loins for your
yeah,
party.
Yeah, I made some cupcakes and I straightened a few things up and that sort of, and then watched the new season first episode of Fringe.
Oh, that's right. So Fringe, and then The Office was on last night. So it was season 7, episode 1. You don't watch The Office, do you?
I do. I just I always have to make that decision of what am I going to. Thursday is one of those weird. Some nights things are, you
it's
know,
a face
all
off.
Yeah, things are all on at the same time, and you have to decide which you're going to do and what. Criminal Minds. I love Criminal Minds, but I somehow missed the end of last season, and the last show of last season was Tim Curry as a serial killer. And he apparently, it ended on a cliffhanger. And so this last night was the first, the season premiere. And it was the conclusion of the Tim Curry as a serial killer thing. And I couldn't watch it because I hadn't watched the previous one. So now I have to watch that. So I had that all going on.
Life is hard.
Life is hard. My life is so complicated.
It's like me sitting there wondering, you know, which speech application I'm supposed to download for my iPhone.
This is something I thought about last night, by the way. And this is when talking about the first world problems of figuring out what show to watch on TV. I had one of those moments where I was thinking about like my parents like not understanding me, you know, my mother not really getting who I was as a person. And thinking about that, it's really not hard to understand why when you figure, you know, my mother, my parents lived through a war. You know, my mother was actually like her family dealt with actual poverty, you know. There was food rationing when my mother was alive. You know, my biggest like childhood traumas involved, you know, trying to get my mom to not buy me uncool pants.
Line for Return of the Jedi is really long.
Yeah, you know, I had allergies and some asthma-related issues, and I had to go to the doctor once a week and get these shots. And sometimes I'd have an asthma attack, and my parents have to drive me to the emergency room. My mother had polio. She lived in a Catholic nursing home for a year as a child, with painful things strapped to her legs to straighten her legs back out after she had polio. You know, I'm allergic to dust.
How am I going to get this iPhone?
Yeah, so it's like, I had one of those moments last night when I was going, it's really not surprising at all, really.
Let me just ask you this real quickly here. We're just so vastly over time that it can't even be fathomed. Jesus, it's almost 2 o'clock at this point. Well, it's Friday. It's Friday, and it's the day before your birthday, and as you said last hour, you're just phoning it in today anyway.
Yeah.
So.
And waiting to see what's in the Think Geek box.
If only there was time. If only there was time. I just have to ask this now, so I apologize to everybody out there who's not either Dawn or I. So when you said that you were already tallying up what applications you were going to get for your iPhone that you actually don't have and probably can't afford at the moment, what else have you decided to get?
I really don't know, because there's 200,000 of them.
Yes, there are.
So, and it's not like they make it really easy for you to... So I started trying to look at review sites where they review apps rather than looking just directly in the app store. I started out just trying to figure out what the things were I need. And I'm trying to figure out between calendar applications, because I've decided maybe to get away from the written notebook calendar into the iPhone, it on the phone when I get the phone. And then the dictation thing, because I want to be able to just start, saying things and note-taking with dictation rather than, having to scribble things down and losing the piece of papers all the time, so.
You know what's creepy is when I say Dawn Taylor, it knows to spell it D-A-W-N. It's just so deeply great and unnerving. All right, it's 503-505-6964. Well, let's do this. We'll get some news. We'll take a break. On the other side, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here. We've got Pop Culture Authority coming up later on, Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, and so forth. At the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do this as a job watch.
All right, ladies and gentlefolk, here is your job watch for Friday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Yeah.
I hate this job. I hate this goddamn job, and I don't need it.
Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day, filling out useless forms and listening to 8 different bosses drone on about mission statements.
And the job in service.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Job Watch.
The House voted Thursday to spend $42 billion bill to send a $42 billion bill to the president aimed at helping small businesses. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that it will create about 500,000 jobs.
This is Pelosi.
This is
one
business.
Or business.
We are doing it in a fiscally responsible way, creating, as I said, 500,000 jobs without adding to the deficit.
Pelosi says it'll make credit more available for Main Street. God, I hate that. I'm sorry.
What does that even mean?
It's well they started that whole thing,
Wall Street and Main Street.
Wall Street and Main Street.
But is that businesses or is it
it's
people?
Businesses.
All right, okay.
In the name of America's small business people, we will send to President Obama legislation that will unleash hundreds of billions of dollars in loans for America's small businesses.
This is like one of those things that Carl Sagan used to say that you suspected he was just making up because he didn't want to say a really big number. We'd say says hundreds of billions of dollars. By the way, we can now do we can smugly say, as a small business owner, Ms. Pelosi, I have to say that that's a thing that you can wield out, just like in any conversation. You just bring it out and just bludgeon people with it.
I like that she said that it will unleash billions of dollars. It makes it sound like they're just going to be flying down the street, slapping us in the face.
Like it's atomic fission.
It's like Hitchcock's The Birds, only it's dollar bills flying around and attacking us. That they're going to make apparently about $12 billion in tax breaks available, supposedly. So
you know what they ought to do is, for people who want this, if you've demonstrated some inability to, to pay for things, or you just have some, you're one of those people has a credit rating of one or something, but it's you feel like you have to have a bigger house. They ought to just do the thing where they put you in the big glass tank or whatever with the bills sort of flying around. You know, and it's like, you know, whatever you whatever you get to catch, you get to keep. But then mixed in with the bills would be sort of there'd be X number of dollar bills or $100 bills or maybe vouchers or coupons floating around inside. But then some of them would be for things that you don't want, like a big kick in the groin. And so you'd have to sort of navigate, what to grab and when.
I think that home ownership and credit cards and things like that, it should be a system that's not unlike when you play a video game, where you have to like achieve certain things and then it unlocks the next level. Like, you know, and they look at it and it's not so much your credit score or whatever. They just go, I'm sorry, you don't have enough experience points to buy a two bedroom house yet. You know, go back and mine some more gravy.
So you just have to just be like World of Warcraft, where you're just like grinding all day to try to get some bullion, so you can go buy a slightly larger automobile.
Which is kind of what life really is when you think about it. Which is one reason why I don't play those games, because I'm already doing that every day.
You're your own sim, Don.
Yeah, I don't see how that's relaxing.
No,
to
it's
go
not.
Like do another job somewhere else.
Well, that's, you know, this is a there's a fascinating book by J.C. Hertz about about video games and the rise of video games and the fall of the video game arcade. And she makes this great, she has this whole chapter, I think she was a correspondent for Wired or something, she was a journalist for Wired magazine, but she wrote this entire section about the rise and then the decline of the American video game arcade. And this is long before console systems sort of took over. But they found out that the reason the video game arcades were vanishing was not because of the home system, which at that point pretty much just consisted of the NES. It had to do with the gender divide and the fact that they figured out that boys would come in and they would play a video game that lasted like 5 or 6 minutes and that would eat up their quarters and then they would just leave. Whereas girls, though, were attracted to redemption games, where you are basically paying to work so that you can get stuff to buy things, where you would go in and you would play like skee ball or whatever the hell the thing is, so you could get like the purple tickets that come out, so you can then use 7,000 purple tickets to buy a small plastic shiny ring that goes on your finger. And they figured out that that was the key to customer retention, is that because the boys didn't play redemption games, but that women did, and that they stayed like 50 times longer or something. And I think that explains why that was video games themselves as a home market were so difficult to crack for the female demographic for so long, because all of the games were just like shooting aliens in the face so that a chick with boobs would give you a trophy. And it wasn't until they started replicating at home essentially what redemption games do, which is making work fun, that they started to get a lot of traction in the market. But it's the same reason that you and I don't play those games.
Yeah.
Because it's like my real life is stressful enough. I don't have to keep a thing alive on this. I can barely keep my dogs alive.
Well, also, and I just don't... If I want to play a game, I want to play a game for relaxation purposes. I don't want to play a game that is just making me like work and work and work and work and work at it. Like, I knew apparently a lot of women loved Myst. That was one of the first big games that women loved, which to me was about the most boring thing I'd ever done, because it involved just sort of walking around a lot in this virtual world until you found some puzzle to solve. Then you would like solve the puzzle, then you had to go walking back around until you found someplace else with another puzzle, and you had to like try and figure out how the puzzles went together. And I was like, and there's no one here and there's nothing going on and I don't get to kill anything. I hate this game.
I remember playing Myst for the first time after having heard, I hadn't seen it, I just read all these reviews. It's the greatest game in the history of the... And it is actually, to this day, Myst, inexplicably, is the best-selling game in PC history. Like, as of 2010, it's the best-selling game ever. And nothing happened. You know what Myst is? Myst is basically looking at a series of paintings while one of those nature sound CDs plays in the background. I mean, that's really what it is.
Also, you're walking around in this beautiful landscape with this quiet, somewhat eerie music playing in the background, and there aren't any other people there.
You're not even really walking, though. You're just looking at a series of pictures. It's like watching slides from somebody else's trip to the Galapagos.
But it just seems like at any moment someone should... I had played enough games at that point that at some point someone should show up and interact with me in some way. The elf should show up and give me the bucket that I have to figure out that there's, like, you know, a rock in the bottom of it that I have to drop in the well or whatever. And then the elf never shows up. There's nobody there. It's like everyone's dead.
You should go back and complain to really. This game is fundamentally elfless. I demand a full restitution of my money. Well, that's like my final thought here is the opposite end of the spectrum, but the same problem. Whereas I just found Myst really boring for the same reason that I told you that, you know, when Laura and I would play like the Lego Star Wars games, I would do like the shooting part. And then whenever it was a puzzle, I would just leave the room and be like, you call me when you figure it out. At the sort of the polar twin to that was when I would try to play Doom 3. And I actually, Doom 3 was the very first game that I actually found so unbelievably terrifying that I just quit playing it at one point because it was just freaking me out. Like, I would try to relax at the end, like, well, it's been a hard day at the office. So I can't wait to go home and blow off some steam by just, I'll just fire up Doom 3 here. And I would settle in. And then it was like, you know, these spidery hell beasts with upside down human faces. They basically looked like huge versions of the spiders from The Mist.
Yeah.
And they would just run at you, like, from the dark corners of the room and then attack you with this horrible squealing noise. I remember, like, the 50th time that happened, I just went, no, I'm done. I turned it off, yeah. and I never played that game again because it was like the least relaxing thing I could possibly have imagined.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that I have a specific, I don't even want to say it's a specific kind of guy brain or something. It's just a specific kind of brain for games where I just want to do things where I get in games where I get to go do the game. I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to unravel puzzles. I don't want to play a game where I have to keep playing the same level 14 times because I keep getting killed.
And because there's no save points along the way.
Yeah, or even just getting killed, go back. Get killed, go back. Try it a different way, go back. Try it a different way, go back. Because I just get frustrated and angry. And then I go find, like, the cheat place, you know, on the internet where somebody explains to me in a walkthrough how to do it. That's why I love stuff like Katamari or Left 4 Dead, where I'm just running around and doing things. And I don't have to, like, stop and figure out, like, you know, which switch gets pulled in which area. You know, unless they're easy puzzles, like with Silent Hill, where it's like you kind of go, oh, I'll bet there's like a door. Was a door here behind where this painting is? Let me do this. Yep, there was a door there. You know, if they're easy puzzles that make me feel good about myself, like I figured out what the number means, then I'm happy. But if it's frustrating and challenging in any way, I just get annoyed and don't want to do it anymore. So, and
she's
then
Dawn Taylor, kids.
And then my husband gets annoyed with me because he's, no, you have to stop and spend like several hours.
It's about the journey, not the destination.
Like, no, it's not. By the way, Mr. Willig is running a little bit late, so
we
can chat all we want.
Awesome.
We can open the box.
Let's,
waiting for him.
You'll note, by the way, that the many times you said that this week, I have avoided doing the whole what's in the box thing. That's just, I'm not going to, it's beneath me. Well, let's do one more. We'll take a break. We'll do Pop Culture Authority, and we'll come back on the other side. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A TV reality show star, Shorty Ross of Animal Planet's Pit Boss, is calling for a Burger King boycott after the fast food restaurant aired a commercial he says is derogatory towards certain dog breeds. Burger King's new TV commercial shows a mailman walking down the street as two pit bull-like dogs go after his ankles. The mail carrier is singing, "Rottweilers and Pit Bulls doing the mailman thing." The commercial was enough to make animal activists call for a Burger King boycott. For a company this large, this huge, with a worldwide presence, to do such a stereotypical thing made me angry. It made me mad, said Shorty Rossi. Rossi and his pit bull, Hercules, are the stars of Pit Boss, a TV show about a pit bull rescue operation that promotes the positive side of pit bulls. I view pit bulls as the most loving dogs, said Rossi. They're nanny dogs for kids. They're your right-hand man, your right-hand companion.
Now, are they actual pit bulls in the ad? Because it says pit bull-like dogs. Well, so I wonder what that even means.
Well, I will say this. Actually, there's a place you can go. I'm not sure where it is online exactly, but it's actually a test where they show you a whole bunch of pictures of dogs and they say which one are the pit bulls.
Right.
Because there are a lot of dogs that look like,
well, everybody
pit
thinks
bulls.
They know what a pit bull is. Well, it attacks, yeah, something, it must be a pit bull.
But the dogs in the Burger King ads are big, muscular-looking, pit bully-looking dogs. Shorty's fans and some the guy, the mailman, actually does say Rottweilers and Pit Bulls in that. He says it. Shorty's fans and some Burger King customers want the ad pulled. They also want an apology. In a statement, Burger King said the TV commercial, quote, is intended to be a humorous parody of the age-old turf battle between mail carriers and dogs and was not meant to cast a negative light on any particular breed of dogs. The Burger King breakfast commercial is one part of a multi-spot campaign that will run over the next several weeks.
Awesome. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here at rickemerson.com, part of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on, Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, our stupid criminal of the week. We'll open the box from ThinkGeek, and Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here as well, and so forth. We've also got Pop Culture Authority coming up in a few. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you today and every day by any number of people, including but not limited to Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211 is how you can contact him. 971-533-3211, and we will talk more about his fine business here in just a skosh. Stay right there. We'll be back on the other side with more. And so did you say that Jim is running late, though?
Yes.
Excellent. So that gives us a little bit of time to perhaps open the box when we return. So stay there. You're listening to the Rick Emerson program right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere. Why isn't the song Happy Birthday in the public domain?
From the Emerson News Network. This is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. The saga of the Happy Birthday song is one of those things that everyone thinks they understand. In truth, the history and legal status of the iconic composition are both in a decidedly gray area. First things first, Happy Birthday, as we currently know it, was written by Mildred and Patty Hill. Leaving aside the fact that it took two people to write a 45-second song, what's more intriguing is that the tune was not originally intended to be a birthday song. Patty Hill first performed the song to her kindergarten class in Kentucky as Good Morning to You in around 1893. However, and here's where the story gets kind of tricky, the song was actually cobbled together from various pieces of other compositions, including A Happy Greeting to All and Good Night to You All. This isn't unusual, as most folk songs are essentially pastiches of existing compositions or works. In 1935, Happy Birthday to You was copyrighted by Preston Ware Orham for the Summey Company. Now, never mind that no one at the Summey Company actually wrote the song. In copyright, it is often a case of finders keepers, and you know the rest. The publisher of Good Morning to All was also the Summey Company, which gave them sort of a squatter's rights to Happy Birthday. Warner Music Group currently owns the copyright and collects about $5,000 per day. That's $2 million per year, by the way, just from Happy Birthday. Warner claims the copyright will expire in 2030, but the underlying compositions for Happy Birthday to You, such as Good Night to You All and A Happy Greeting to All, have all entered the public domain. No less an authority than Supreme Court Associate Justice Stephen Breyer has expressed his doubts that Happy Birthday is still protected by the copyright. Arguably, one could claim that the lyrics by Mildred and Patty Hill are copyrightable, but those are only a small part of the composition and were themselves in large part taken from the preceding works. So, in essence, no one really knows if Happy Birthday is still protected by copyright or if it has in fact fallen into the public domain. It is akin to saying that eggs, milk, and cheese are all free, but that one can't legally make an omelet. It's all very, very confusing. In the meantime, the profits keep rolling in, and that is the strange saga of the Happy Birthday song.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Live a live, bow, flirt, and conquer, then withdraw. Live, live a live, run, live a live, then maybe might come back for more. In love, with all of my heart. The act of love is more of an art. Irrational passion, some will say. But I'm no glutton, more a love gourmet. Live, I see myself in others' eyes. Live, I work to please and compromise. I've been known to disagree, but never disagreeably. The charm of my smile will melt your eyes. There's enough good in me to go around twice. There is beauty here on earth. I see heaven in my mind. Love and peace is everywhere for you and me and all mankind.
Lib-a-lib-ra-lib-lib-a-lib. Extremes in life are all around. Lib-lib-a-lib-ra-lib-lib-a-lib. But I prefer the middle ground. Don't want the raggedy, the cheap, and the shoddy. I like to take good care of my body. When diet calls for a remedy, who watches scales more so than me? Lib-lib-a-lib-ra, lib-lib-a-lib-ra. Lib-lib-a-lib-ra, lib-lib-a-lib-ra. Lib-lib-a-lib-ra, lib-lib-a-lib-ra. Lib-lib-a-lib-ra, lib-lib-a-lib-ra. Lib-lib-a-lib-ra, lib-lib-a-lib-ra.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. I have one of those for every sign of the zodiac, by the way.
It's eerie how well that described me.
It's like he knew you personally, Dawn. It's like he was looking into your soul when he wrote it. It's 503-505-6964. I apologize. Somebody was actually just ringing us up just now, and I went to put it on hold, and I think I actually disconnected whoever it was. So Rick Emerson regrets the error. Sorry about that. It's so if you were endeavoring to share a birthday greeting with Dawn via the telephone, only to be rudely hung up on by me, Rick Emerson. I guess that's just tough cheese.
You just don't want anyone else showing me any love.
That's right. I wish to hog your affections for myself, Dawn. It's 503-505-6964. Mr. Big Jim Willig joining us here in a bit. Snuff Watch, Obama Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, and all of that. So let's do this. We'll go back to the news desk. I will do some pre-opening of the box here without actually looking inside this box from ThinkGeek.com. And then we'll root around in it like small children who've been left alone with a precious item. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Portland has become one of the largest hubs for child sex trafficking, and 82nd Avenue is at the core of the business, according to a story that aired Wednesday night on ABC's Nightline. On the show, Nightline reports that Northeast and Southeast 82nd Avenue is so well known in the sex trade that it has its own nickname, The Track. Nightline also said Portland has the nickname Pornland, due to the high number of strip joints and massage parlors in the city.
All right, I resent this story on like three different levels. One, no one calls it The Track. That's a lie. That's just one of those things like, you know, teenagers have a brand new fetish biting each other the wake of the Twilight films.
And if we knew that, if Portland was called Pornland by anyone, we would know it.
Also,
we'd probably embrace it.
I was just going to say that you teased this early on by saying that we were now called Pornland, and I was going to be like, damn right. But they have to go and ruin it by linking it to the child sex trade, which means now that if I embrace the name Pornland for Portland, that like, that I'm a pedophile. Thirdly, when they say that 82nd Avenue is like the hub or whatever of some thriving like child sex trade thing in Portland, that is the sex trade equivalent, Dawn, of just saying I think it was a pit bull. It's just too easy to say that it was 82nd, when of course it's probably not 82nd, because that's exactly where anybody who was in any sort of position of law enforcing authority in Portland, that is the first place they would look. Which, of course, is why it doesn't happen there. It's always like in the suburbs, always. That sort of thing is always like in the basement of some guy. It's like in a guy's rec room, like in a condo, like near Terwilliger or something.
Well, investigators with Nightline said many of the teen girls working the street come from good homes, got into bad situations, and now feel that they can't escape. The girls are often brought to Portland from out of the area. One 13-year-old who called herself Katie said that girls get roped into the sex trade through pimps. They're called pimps, Rick.
What's a pimp now, Dawn?
Apparently these are gentlemen who approach these girls and pretend to be their boyfriends, then buy them nice gifts, and then eventually intimidate them into working as strippers and eventually prostitutes.
How would you like to be able to afford a fine feather hat like this for yourself?
Sergeant Mike Geiger with the Portland Police say the men typically meet the girls in parks, malls, or other gathering spots for youth.
Really?
And gather information about the girls to find an area to exploit, such as family trouble, finances, or drugs. They then work to fill those needs and push the girls into the sex trade. Local police told Nightline they have seen girls as young as 12 years old on the street working as prostitutes. Known broadly as one of the most livable cities in America, Portland also has the largest legal sex industry per capita in the nation, including even Las Vegas, according to a victims advocacy group that worked with Nightline. She says the industry, both legal and otherwise, is built on the exploitation of innocent people. She said some of the underage girls she has seen are gang raped and even branded by their so-called pimps.
Are we at the end of this particular story?
Most ridiculous.
Please tell me the word pimps is in quotes.
No, it's not, but it might as well be,
yeah.
Since they're trying to, you know. The girls get off of buses when they're dazzled by the lights of the big city, and their innocence is taken away from them by these gentlemen in their flashy duds who offer them the high life.
Are they trying to take the word pimp back in some horrible negative way?
I think so.
They resent its appropriation by the gangly youths at the mall. All right. I like the idea, by the way, if you go to a park, there's just going to be like a gaggle of pimps waiting for you there. You know, like it's sort of a, you know, like it's kind of a work truck for this, you know, for the sex industry that comes through.
They're muscling shoulder to shoulder and elbow to elbow with all the pedophiles that are waiting for children to wander 3 feet away from their parents so they can snatch them up.
And reefer salesmen.
Yes, because the world is a dangerous, terrifying place, and you should never let your child out of your sight. Ever.
By the way, speaking of reefer, if I could just say this. So Don and I were sitting in the kitchen yesterday. The kitchen, so that's a green room. And so there's one remaining vacancy in this building where we are, in the towering structure that houses the Emerson News Network. There is actually a vacant office. And so every single day.
There was a really nice big one that the people just moved out of downstairs that we were considering, but it is.
I think that's
it's a tad expensive.
That's got to be the one they're showing, because I don't think there's any other space open here. But every day, without fail, as we're sitting in the kitchen, Donna, the office manager, who is just a charming, if somewhat unpredictable woman, she will be showing a prospective tenant through, and it's like. And she'll be giving them the whole, like, and this is the ground floor. Here's the mailboxes. I'll show you the rooftop patio in a second. This is the second floor. Here's our kitchen area. And invariably, as she is bringing somebody in who might be able to, you know, might contribute to our economy here, both specifically in this building and in general by renting the place, she will open the door always right as Dawn or I are saying something hideous, or as Sarah is having some sort of a who can drink the malt liquor the fastest contest with someone.
And then Donna will say, these are the radio people.
And then she just hustles them out of the room like as quickly as she can. Let's go look at that roof right now. With the implication obviously being that while she distracts them with the rooftop patio for a few minutes, that we're supposed to clean up the joint and try to look respectable. So in any event. But as yesterday, as we were just sitting in the kitchen doing something or other, she brings in these guys who I just said looked like jazz musicians, which is the reefer thing made me think of that. Because it was like guys with like these sort of white guys with fedoras and like tweed jackets and little soul patchy things on. And I expected one of them just to call me, you know, just to call me man and start blowing a trumpet while leaning against a lamppost outside.
And then you suggested we can't do this because it's not our building, but it would be great to have the big office for rent sign in small print underneath. No jazz musicians.
Yeah, I just like the idea of putting up, because there is a huge sign up front of the building that just says for rent. But I... just to see reactions from people, I think it would be great if we just put up like a really outdated, you know, no Irish sign.
Yeah.
Just like, how would people even respond to that?
I know.
We should, you know, we're always talking about ways to get publicity, Don, and how we could try to get the news interested in what we do here. We should totally pick, some group that never gets picked on anymore, and they just go, and they just pick like a really stridently anti-them policy.
I don't remember when this was. This had to be like 30 years ago, but Martin Mull did a little publicity thing involving an album that he had out, and he wanted you to send in something. He wanted you to write a poem or draw a picture or do something, and it had something to do with winning something that was involved in the release of his album. And I don't remember anything about the whole thing except that it said, you know, put your name and address and yada yada, send the thing. And at the very bottom of it, it said, Indians, no sand paintings, please.
See? It's just it is what a friend of mine would call the intangibly yet inarguably humorous. It's funny for reasons you can't quite quantify. Is Mr. Willig in the building?
He is indeed.
In the house.
He is in the house.
As the youth say, when they're not being rounded up by pimps in the park throughout porn land.
In the his house, as sure. the children say.
I just want to trademark porn land now and just, you know, in regards to Portland. All right. Well, here's what we could do. We could go through the box of Think Geek stuff now, mm-hmm. or we could take a break, bring Jim into the studio, and actually go through it with him here. And then we've got some other stuff to get to as well. We've got the Stupid Criminal of the Week, Obama Watch, Snuff
Watch. But
doesn't
it seem a little like we're showing off our stuff in front of the guy?
As opposed to showing it off to everybody who's listening?
Yeah, but okay.
I mean, here's the thing: is we're going to be giving it away, though. Like that's the thing. It's like it's actually these. That and I should make that clear. Actually, this is not really for these things are not for Rick and Dawn. No. Rick and Dawn.
Some of it might.
No, none of them.
I don't get to keep anything.
Not even
if there's one thing that's just like really awesomely Dawn-like.
This is that thing where you're just asking me in front of everybody, and so now then I think now it just it's really not even up to me. It's really up to Cheryl,
it's
I suppose.
My birthday.
Cheryl, it's not your birthday until tomorrow. That's like saying that anything that we acquire this week belongs to you.
It's birthday Eve.
It's your birthday year. Everything really is your property. Well, fine, I suppose, as we go through the box, if there's something that just screams Dawn Taylor. But
And Cheryl would like you to take pictures with your iPhone.
Okay. I will actually do that, and I'll put those up in the gallery, which is at rickemerson.com/pictures. So I should actually note, because we referenced this and the big box of stuff that we got from General Mills, or that Cheryl got us the Bugle, the box of chocolate, mm-hmm. you know, peanut butter Bugles and whatever, that so our eye on all of this stuff is for eventual giveaway purposes.
Right.
But of course, it has to be inventoried and tallied.
Yeah.
And I suppose if something should fall out of the box and not end up being tabulated as part of the giveaway pile, then who am I to say differently? Who am I? I'll be none the wiser.
And you don't know. There might not be anything in there that I feel, you know, really really speaks to me.
Okay. Well, let's do this.
Do the break and then
let's do the break. We'll come back on the other side with Mr. Willig. We will have the Stupid Criminal of the Week, Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, and we'll get to this box of stuff from Think Geek. These items that we'll be giving away at some point in the immediate future. You stay there. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere.
It's prom night and I am lonely, lo and behold. this must be fake. My lip starts to shake. How does she know who I am? And why does she give a damn about?
I've got 2 tickets to Iron Maiden. Maybe come with me Friday. Don't say maybe. I'm just a teenage dirtbag baby like you.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. In mere moments, we'll be joined by our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig. He's going to be talking about the performance happening tomorrow. Which, and by the way, I'm looking at the address here, and it is happening in the hub of Portland's apparently burgeoning child sex trade. It's happening, where is it, the Strip?
The Track.
The Track, I'm sorry, the Track.
Everyone knows that, Rick. It's called The Track.
It's where all the best comedy happens. We've also got this box of stuff from Think Geek to my immediate right, so we'll go through that here in a few. That stuff's all going to be, and I'll put the pictures of all of this up in the gallery. And the gallery is at rickemerson.com/pictures. So we'll have a whole, where Don and I, by the way, spent about, when we weren't busy horrifying prospective tenants by just saying things like, no Irish allowed yesterday, we were putting up photos of our dogs and your cat. So we have a whole photo album just called Our Pets.
Yeah, because we're idiots.
Because that's how we'd like to use trillion-dollar technology here, is to inflict pictures of my... And I swear to Christ, just in case anybody should be under the illusions, you know, that I am in any way masculine or manly, you can go and see that actually one of the photos in the My Pets catalog is... the album is actually just my little fluffy white dog, Max, sitting on Santa's lap.
That picture of Philo cracks me up every time I look at it. I can't stop laughing. He looks like Gabby Hayes.
Wow.
He's got like a lazy eye and the mouth is like all, and he looks like Gabby Hayes.
Gabby Hayes for the win. All right, well done. Anyway, we've got all of that coming up. Plus, Stupid Criminal of the Week, Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, if we have time. I think Big Jim has a top five. There's so little to do, so much time. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program, our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Hello, sir.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm dandy.
So, the hub.
You had hair on your head the last time you were here.
It's true.
Did you shave your head?
I have a lot of creditors looking for me, so I find it's best to keep the look alternating.
Have you seen this man? And it's like a bushy hair to you, so you thought you'd go the other way?
I've got that look of, like, I'm ready for Daughtry kind of feel about me, like, you know, Alter Bridge.
Which is good, as opposed to the I'm looking for Popeye look, which is the
kind
of
the thing.
The hey, is that guy's name Bluto or Brutus?
Bluto.
Bluto.
There's no Brutus who looks for Popeye?
No.
No, Brutus actually took the bullet for Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I never can give you a straight. So what is the deal? Did you decide the shaved head thing? Because it works. Don't get me wrong. It looks
Thank
good.
You.
I like it.
Well, yeah. I started off 2009. I just wanted to change up everything that I had going on. And I found out that my hair is falling out of my head. If it does not like me, I do not like it. So I took the offensive, and I went the Bruce Willis route.
This is a walk before they make you run kind of a thing.
Pretty much,
you
yeah.
can't fire me. I'm firing you.
I quit. Yeah. I quit. I quit balding, yes.
Awesome. Hey, before we do anything else, so let's mention the show. This is coming up tomorrow. It is the Shamrock, Southeast 4919 82nd Avenue.
That's correct.
Starts at 9 p.m. So what is it? So give me an overview. Is it you performing? Is it other people performing? Is it a whole night of comedy?
It's an open mic, which means it's basically an open foray. If you've been a seasoned veteran, season, if you're a first-time novice, you just want to always try stand-up comedy, by all means, please come on down. We do have a specific spot of people allowed per night, because this is not going to go until, like, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning. We have to sort of keep it brief somewhat for about 2 hours. So come down to get 3 to 5 minutes to get up stage and do your thing. So this is your 15 minutes of fame.
And so,
I'll tell you, it's more like 3 to 5 minutes.
3 to 5. This is your 3 to 5 minutes of fame. Should you do well, we'll give you an additional 2.
I was actually going to ask how long it goes, and if you ever have to, do you have like a vaudevillian hook that just sort of? My whole life, I have wanted to see that thing used on somebody where the hook comes out of, you know, the wings and just sort of not funny and just pulls you right off stage,
like a Shanghai tunnel kind of trapdoor. Yeah, we could work out something. I have to speak with the management about that, but the first one, I actually had this woman call me out of the blue and say that she had my name referred to her, and she has a bar on 82nd, the one bar on 82nd Avenue, where prostitutes meet to greet, you know. And so anyway, needless to say, she wanted to put this together, and it's on a Saturday, which is unheard of. Normally, open mics are reserved for the more slower nights of the week for a bar, like a Tuesday or a Wednesday kind of thing. But for whatever reason, she's a sports bar. She's like, the place is going to be packed. It's going to be a great time.
And so will people be able to? Are you performing? Are you running it? Or are you doing both?
I'm emceeing. So basically, right. I do a couple of minutes up front just to sort of get the audience nice and, you know, and relaxed.
Put them
loose.
In a whimsical mood.
Exactly. You know, set the stage, so to speak, and then I hand it off and let the train wreck commence.
Now, when how long do people get if they just show up? Like an open mic night, you know, what is the? Is it 3 minutes? Is it 5 minutes? Or is it like whenever you feel like you're done, friend?
It's a gauge. I mean, you can pretty much tell within the first, I'd say, minute and a half whether someone's going to do well or not. So with that, you kind of like, okay, I'm going to give you this much time. If I see you're doing well, I'll give you the full 5. If you're not, I'm going to cut you off maybe around 3.5, closer to 4.
How do you cut them off? I'm fascinated by the dynamics of this.
Have you ever seen the Blues Brothers?
Yes.
Obviously, there's chicken wire and beer bottles involved. No, we flash the lights, or in this day and age of technocracy that we have, I will flash my cell phone from the back of the bar.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I had no idea that's how that worked. That you waved a
in
light
actual,
and that was the sort
in
of
actual
it off.
Comedy clubs. Yeah, they have a light at behind the audience that you can see from the stage that they flash light when your time's just about up.
So it's like, because I guess on the Oscars they have that too, which everybody disregards. But I mean, it's a thing that blinks at the back of the hall that says, like, you got 10. And then when it's solid, it's like, get off or something.
Yeah, it starts off as a flashing light and then like one of those laser pointers towards your forehead kind of thing.
And then if you don't leave, Jim just gets up and punches you.
I look like a bouncer. Get off my stage.
When people
My father never hugged me.
Sorry. how many people at an open? Because this all just sounds like so condescending to say, but you're an amusing guy, Jim. You're a funny guy. But at an open mic night, are most people at an open mic night like this? Are they people who have some kind of comedy experience, but they're not really doing it full time yet, or are most of them just like some guy was like, well, my mom always said that I was real funny, and so I figured I'd try that out and see how it worked.
Well, open mic comedy is to what legitimate comedy is as karaoke is to legitimate singers. You can go to a karaoke night, and it's usually peopled by people with a little bit of talent, more maybe on the lower end, but a few smatterings of genuine talent that kind of blow you out and surprises you, which is one of the reasons why you show up in the first place. Plus, the fact that it's an open forum gives people the chance to not just sit there and be a passive observer of the show. They can actually put their name down, have 3 Long Island iced teas and a Tawaka, and then get up on stage and make a blithering fool of themselves, end up on YouTube, or hopefully Tosh.0.
But can I just tell you this? I don't even know what a Tawaka is, but this is why you're a funny guy, because you knew that even if I didn't have any idea what the hell you were talking about, it sounded funny.
It's going back to vaudeville. It doesn't matter what, if the audience, you know, like Titicaca, I don't know where it is. If you point it to me on a map, I have no clue, but the word itself implies humor.
We should just have a show where we just try to work in like as many like the hard K words as possible, like a Saskatoon, Saskatchewan kind of a thing.
Kumquat.
Ooh, very good. That's like a shell. It's like a double barrel alliteration.
We have this recurring feature we do sometimes. It's called, we did one earlier today actually called Pop Culture Authority, where we answer questions what is the deal with? Sort of, it's like today we had, why isn't Happy Birthday in the public domain?
Somebody got that?
Somebody asked me, I got an email saying, hey, Rick, you know, can you answer why isn't Happy Birthday in the public domain? So we had this whole thing about the history of the song and the whatever. But Dawn actually did one a couple weeks ago about why are K words Like, everybody hears that they're funny, but why are they funny? And there was this whole scientific, like, this neuro-linguistic explanation for why that kind of hard plosive sound is funny in your head. Let me ask you this, though, Mr. Funny Guy.
Putting baby in a corner here.
What is the, in your assessment, what is the funniest beverage?
The funniest beverage?
Because I got my own assessment on that. When next time you're here, we're going to do a whole checklist. And there's no right or wrong answers. I'm just saying, like, as a comic, the next time you're here, there's a little preamble. This is a preview of what you're getting. I'm going to give you a whole, like, fill-in-the-blanks thing of what you think is the funniest whatever.
Okay. For beverage, I'm going to have to vote for Nog, be it eggnog or any other form of Nog. The suffix nog itself has kind of a funny seasonal feel to it. It reminds you of times gone by, but at the same time, it's basically like it's like omelet and booze, but not without the heat. You know what I'm saying? It's like egg and alcohol. Like, who was so drunk at a Christmas party? Like, you know, what do we have left to mix the rum with? Eggs. Do it. Just throw it in the bucket. We'll mix it all around. You got cinnamon? Done. All right, just throw it in there, too. We'll get this taken care of. So, yeah, my vote, eggnog.
Don Taylor, the funniest beverage?
Yoo-hoo.
See, Yoo-hoo's... Ooh. See, that's what I'm... See, right there. That's where it's like... This is like... It's like your Eminem freestyling an 8 Mile right now. I'm saying for
3-1-3.
I used to say squirt.
that's low-lying fruit, Rick. I think more of you.
But see, but that's the thing is, I don't think of it. See, fortunately, almost no one expects more of me. You are like the lone person who expects me to rise above that. No one else does. They just expect the lowest common denominator, and I deliver.
I'm a little kid in the Mean Joe Green Coca-Cola commercial, just like talking like, hey, Rick.
I've come around, though. I no longer say squirt. My new thing is Mr. Pibb. I think that Mr. Pibb is goddamn hilarious. And I don't know why. I think it's because the Mr. is longer than the Pibb. It's, you know,
also the fact that it is knockoff Dr. Pepper.
Yes.
So that makes it funny to be any of these drinks that is like not the actual drink.
Yeah.
Like you're drinking Mountain Mist instead of Mountain Dew. Now, that's funny.
Very, very much so. Yeah. Like all like the Dr. Rocket. Like, you know, and like the variations are in, like, it's almost like there's like a word bank, and they're just like, okay, let's take Mountain and Yeti, and we'll make our own beverage. It'll be kind of like a cola with like a creamsicle aftertaste.
But also, if you say, you know, I was drinking a Coke Zero, it's not really funny. If you say, I was drinking my Big K diet soda,
right?
That's amusing.
Well, it's that, you know, at Safeway, back when I was a youth, they used to sell this thing called Skipper. And see, that is not only an old person reference, but that is a geographic reference as well, because I don't think they had that elsewhere in the country, because I'm pretty sure that Skipper, which was Safeway's in-house Dr. Pepper.
But it wasn't just Skipper, it was Dr. Skipper, I believe.
Go to 4 years of doctor school to be called Mr.
You get
Thank
diet
you.
And then you could get Diet Dr. Skipper, which is
off,
extra funny.
Monsignor Skipper.
Eminence.
They might have augmented it at some point. I think at a certain point they either added or dropped the doctor. Because the Pepsi Cola company or whoever, I think might have actually, I think it might have started out as Dr. Skipper, but I think some lawyer somewhere must have said like, hey, you Bob, that's a little too close. Because I remember it being sans doctor. So I wonder if that was like, if they got a little cease and desist, like that was one step too close. And that was put out of like their own in-house brand, which was the Craigmont brand.
Yeah,
that just makes me thirsty hearing the word Craigmont.
It was just terrible. It was the worst soda on earth. And I know people say that there's no difference between themselves, because that's a lie, though. That is just a lie. The Craigmont, they didn't call it Safeway brand or Safeway Select or whatever, because now they just call everything like, you know, like the actual Fred Meyer brand or Sam's brand or something. But they actually tried to pretend that it was like that it was just like some brand that they just happened to stock in massive amounts.
That you couldn't buy anywhere else.
It was terrible. And it's a Craigmont, and the M, though, was like a mountain range, and it was awful. And one of the things that they sold, and I swear to God, I'm not making this up, and when they weren't busy just trying to shove Dr. Skipper on us, the other thing that the Craigmont Soda Company, which was Safeway, tried to sell was, I swear to Christ, carbonated chocolate mint soda.
Oh.
I don't know why you would ever... I mean, it was just it was like liquid leavings that they had just...
Great band name, though.
Sluiced into a barrel and then injected with, you know, a certain amount of fizz. It's just awful.
I think that's what Yahoo Sirius came up with in Young Einstein.
Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Hey, who's funnier, Yahoo Sirius or the Jacko guy from the Energizer commercials?
Oh, Yahoo.
What about Yahoo Sirius and Yakov Smirnoff?
Yakov Smirnoff, because he's been through more.
Yeah, Yakov Smirnoff, if only because it's just his shtick is still funny even if you're not watching him.
Yeah.
You could just always mock Yakov Smirnoff for
and there's
for
more references, I would say, to him than there would any other kind of like, you know, you don't make a Yahoo Serious reference in popular culture and then be like, oh, yeah, no, I get that. I get that. You make a, in my country, you're already halfway to a laugh. Yeah,
exactly. No, that's, it, you really are right.
The socks, about... where are you?
It doesn't even have to make sense, but it always works.
I had some brilliant segue planned into this whole this live spot. Now it's just gone. Gone from this place. Well, whatever. This humor is brought to you by, among other folks, The Cleaning Solution. That is Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner and operator of that fine service. So, Jim, do you find occasionally that your home is just filthy?
Absolutely.
Just a cess-ridden pool of despair?
I don't know how I get by.
Me either. It's just, I think about, seriously, and this is, and I don't know if you live by yourself or with somebody.
I live in squalor, so it's like I'm living with someone.
See, that was my thing, is like when I went from living with a house of dudes to living by myself and then back to living with a house of dudes some years ago, and it was like... It was like living in a terrarium, basically, because I would just, like, I got the newspaper every day at work, but I got it delivered to my apartment for reasons that sort of, that a past understanding, I think it was like the guy who lived there before me, but so I would do this ritual every morning. I would open the door, and I would get ready to go to work, and I would walk out the front door, and I would bend down, and I would pick up the Salt Lake Tribune, I think it was, and I would throw it over my shoulder back into the apartment. And then I would go to work, where I read the newspaper. So when I came home, no need to read this one. Same news as this morning. And so then I had this Richard Dreyfuss-esque Devil's Tower mound of
What's
newspapers.
What's he building in there?
Which I swear to Christ was still there when I moved out. By the time I left that apartment, this is long after they had like bricked up my mailbox. They'd stopped delivering the mail. They turned off. At one point, they turned off my power. Because I was broke and I was too lazy to ever pay any of my bills. And so I went to Borders and I bought like the little itty-bitty book light, and that's how I would sort of read or actually, you know, like forage for clean clothes. And it was like I was living in a Cormac McCarthy novel.
You're
just
like
sort
urban
of,
spelunking.
Really, in my own apartment. And then I've mentioned this before, but then when I finally moved out to go back to a house of dudes because I was, you know, I'd lost my job and whatever. And when I finally moved out, I just had a friend show up at like 3 in the morning and I threw a couple garbage bags of my things down off the balcony into the back of his truck and I got in the back and go, go! And I just left a note on the door like, sorry, you know? And I just picture that landlord
Damn
just...
Damn you art students!
Landlord just opening the door, you know, of the house and it just being like a biohazard field. And just, you know, and just the poor misery that bastard must have had trying to clean that place. But here in 2010, now in these modern times, you don't need to clean that place yourself. You call Mr. Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. He can do cleaning of carpet, upholstery, tile, linoleum, your hardwood, anything is in your entryway, whatever it is that your feet might touch, whether it's a damage from your pet or maybe some horrible, obnoxious, unruly, disrespectful tenant who just spits on the idea of private property and respect for others. You can get all that clean so you don't have to worry about it, and once it's clean, he can actually help keep it clean with a maintenance program so that it stays looking good forevermore. And that's, you know, once you actually get it clean, you're maintaining it. It's only like 40% of the cost of actually getting it clean in the first place. So
it's like one-stop shop, basically.
That's what I'm saying. And so, as you know, and as an American, you need not trouble yourself with actual tedious, drudge-filled manual labor ever again. You've got people for that. And by people, I mean Michael Beatty, 971-533-3211. He's proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show and all the programming here at the Emerson News Network. Mr. Michael Beatty, the Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Hello, Dawn Taylor.
Hello. It's time for our Stupid Criminal of the Week.
Sweet.
Excellent. And let me just open up the appropriate sounder here. Our Stupid Criminal of the Week, of course, is brought to you by MugshotList.com. Have you gone to MugshotList.com?
I have not. Is this similar to, like, the Busted kind of thing?
It is. It's actually better than Busted, A, because it's online. It's got a fully searchable database, and it is local. It's actually, and predates the aforementioned paper.
Hello, Fravich List.
You can actually, you can see it from anywhere you might go, anywhere in the world where you have an internet connection, and it's actually updated around the clock by a team of robots. It it covers all kinds of states, and they are adding new states and counties 24 hours a day. Mugshots usually go up within hours of the arrest taking place. It is owned and operated by a longtime listener of ours, a guy named Andy, who is also a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show. He brings you... I've got two things playing at once for reasons
do.
That...
That one's wrong.
This is totally the wrong thing.
That's not it.
No. You know what it is?
wrong?
It's wrong. It's not so much correct. It is entirely incorrect, Don.
It's
that's exactly what that is.
Is inadequate.
That's what I'm saying. All right. So, Andy, at mugshotlist.com brings you this, your stupid criminal of the week.
Police in Alliance, Ohio, responded to a theft call at a Walmart around 6 a.m. Wednesday after a man was seen running into the darkness after leaving the rear door with a shopping cart full of merchandise. Investigators found an unoccupied vehicle behind the building, and the engine was running, but the suspect was nowhere to be seen. Police did, however, find him later when they got a call about a man trapped inside a garbage truck. The caller identified himself as a friend of James Brienzo, who had used his cell phone to call his friend for help after the dumpster in which he had been hiding was emptied into a trash-hauling truck.
You won't believe where I'm calling you from.
Fantastic.
Police Chief Scott Griffith said, when they pick up a new trash bin, they mechanically push the contents to the rear to make room for the next dumpster. He was pretty well compacted to the rear of the truck. Police dispatchers contacted Brienzo on his cell phone and located him through the phone's GPS. Police worked to free the man, but couldn't, so the truck was taken to the recycling center, where it was emptied. We had to actually dump the contents of the truck to get him out, said Chief Griffith. John Seibold, manager of the recycling center, said he was conscious when he came out. He actually asked for a bottle of water, then passed out. He looked pretty bad off. He was all scraped up on the side. So all of this makes James Brienzo our stupid criminal of the week.
Fantastic. Congratulations, if that is the word for it. That is your stupid criminal of the week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Run by our good friend Andy, covering 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. Always adding more counties and states. And don't forget, a full membership to mugshotlist.com gets you full searchability. You can browse the mugshots by categories like county and gender, and you can view an unlimited number of pages. And actually, we are awarding one full membership right now to Allison. Now, this is spelled M-A-Z-O-N. Mazon. Jim?
All three of them win.
There you go. Allison is the winner of a full membership to mugshotlist.com. Mugshotlist.com, again, run by listener Andy. So there you go. That is Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Fantastic. Once again, Don Taylor at the news desk.
We don't have time to open that box today, do we?
We can go through the box right now, but what we're probably going to have to do is...
because we need to do his top...
Well, I was going to say, actually, presuming that you're going to join us again at some time in the near future...
Absolutely, yeah.
We will probably have to... Would you mind if we postponed your top five
Not
until next
problem
time?
Not a problem at all, yeah.
Because we're going to be giving away the stuff in this box from Think Geek. And also, we've been, And plus, it's Don's birthday tomorrow, and I've been, she's been waiting to open the box for like 3 days, and it's just going to be a lot of whining if we don't get to
That's
it.
That's right.
So, anyway. But
he treats you so well.
Because I'm a pretty, pretty princess.
Damn right.
That's right. So, let me say this one more time here, though, before we go into the box. The Shamrock at Southeast 4919 82nd Avenue. This is tomorrow night, starts at 9 p.m., and spots are limited. So how many spots are there for this for the open mic night if people want to go?
I'm going to actually bookmark it at about 25 to 30. And that's not even being facetious. There are open mics that are popular around Portland that will fill up about 40-plus comics, which will lead into about a 5-hour-long hostage situation, similar kind of. And after a while, the audience is like, okay, we're done. We've laughed as hard as we possibly can. There might be more talent on the way. Save it for next time. Don't spill it all out this time. So I just want to get the beak wet of the venue over there at the Shamrock. Let them know that we've got some of Portland's finest comics going to be coming out, as well as people that have just wanted to always try comedy. The option is there on the table. Starts at 9. Get there early so that we can get you on the list and make sure that you get a chance to, let your freak flag fly.
Now, do people have to, do they have to sign up, like, as soon as they get there? Or, like, is it a thing where if the comedy's going on, a guy can sort of, like, has one drink too many or one drink, the right amount maybe, and raises his hand and says, like, me, I can be funny?
we'll have a time frame set for it once we get there. And ideally, once you get there, you want to sign up, get your name on there. If there are still some spots available, I'll be running it. I'll keep it open until the very end. If we have time left over at the very end with no more comics, then we'll open it up to a kind of Whose Line Is It Anyway style improv, which is very popular amongst the comics.
Excellent. All right. So this is, without further ado, I got the box of stuff from Think Geek here. So Cheryl had talked to Think Geek, because have you ever shopped at Think Geek? Have you gone there?
Yes, I have, actually.
It's just that who here has purchased something from Think Geek? Anyone?
I have.
What is it, Don Taylor?
I bought my husband a cool little folding knife I've bought a couple of things from them. I can't remember what they are off the top of my head, but I've shopped with them a few times.
I bought the, I've actually purchased two different variations on this this item. I purchased that little, that thing that goes in your keychain that lets you turn off any television in the world.
What?
Yeah. No, it's the greatest thing. I don't have it with me. But it's a little, it's a universal remote control on your, and it's just, it's, you know, it's the size of like, you know, like the little alarm thing for your car alarm.
Key fob.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, but you can point it at a television and press the button and it just cycles through the off code for every major brand of TV, and then eventually all of the televisions are off.
Sweet.
They then followed it up, and this is how they got me the second time. They followed it up with one that actually let you like do mute or volume up and down or actually channel changing. And so I would just go into bars or restaurants, and if there was something on that displeased me, I would just kind of go ching, and I would just
hello,
do it
Kate and Allie.
It didn't make there's a Petticoat Junction marathon on, and we're watching it now. But yeah, it doesn't make any noise, doesn't light up, doesn't do anything. It's completely non-conspicuous.
Sweet.
I tested it for the first time in a Walmart, where I just went into the electronics section to that wall of televisions, and I wish that I had filmed myself doing it, because I just pointed it, and I went, no, and I just pressed the button, and they just all went, bish, and they just went off, and it was like a wave of darkness. It was like, it was...
It's powder! He's back!
Seriously. Well done. That's so much better than the Escape from Los Angeles reference I was going to make. So I tried to buy this thing last year, and it's like perpetually out of stock, and it's the brownie pan that lets you there where all of the brownies have edges.
Are you serious?
It sort of looks like a maze, like a top-down view of a maze. And so it's got like a thin metal wall that threads throughout the brownie pan. So the upshot is that you're basically baking brownies that all of them have edge pieces.
Because those are the most coveted after. Yes, exactly.
It's like a muffin made of nothing but top. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. All right.
God bless you, Think Geek.
So Cheryl was on the phone and she's like, "Hey, so we got all these nerds who listen to us, and what do you have for us?" And so they have sent us a box of a number of things. So I'm just going to reach in sort of randomly, and I will put these out on the table, and then the bulk of basically whatever Dawn doesn't take home with her, we'll be giving away to the fine people in the audience at some point.
And I promise not to be greedy. I just want one thing.
Get yours, woman. Get yours.
All right, Jim, I'll hand that to you.
Oh, God.
It is a tabletop TARDIS that fits conveniently on any desk and apparently lights up, makes sounds.
Yes, it's a TARDIS USB hub.
Oh, nice.
So you can use this as to plug in as many USB devices as you need, plus it's a little TARDIS that lights up. That's very cool.
For the three of you that may or may not have just woken up from comas, the TARDIS obviously is the time-traveling or the interdimensional traveling device of Doctor Who.
Wow. Yes. I'm impressed that you just sort of pulled that out like that.
Thank you.
When I handed it to you, I was sort of thinking, you know, Doctor Who fan, not a Doctor Who fan. Will he know the TARDIS? Will he not?
And his eyes lit up and he got all excited.
Is there a scarf in there too? That'd be awesome.
Because I made a reference earlier. I referred to Rick as a Time Lord and then had to admit, which I'm not even sure what that means because I've hardly watched any Doctor Who. I just know he's a Time Lord.
See, and that's my thing is like, you know, that is one of those, it's one of my geek Achilles heels.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's like I'm surrounded by people that are free. Like Cheryl's, she's just a freak for Doctor Who. And I know enough to sort of reference, and I kind of get the gist of it. It's just one of those things, for whatever reason, I missed it in my formative years, and I've never really had a chance to catch up.
Well, we have enough Doctor Who fans that I think if we came up with some kind of really obscure trivia question, we could give this away as a prize.
It really is awesome. I mean, it's like, it's maybe 7 inches high, maybe 4 inches across, and it is, the police box / TARDIS that functions as a USB hub, which allows you then...
And it makes flashing Leonard and TARDIS sounds.
Sweet.
By the way, I'm going to encourage everybody now to start referring to folks they know who maybe are a little on the dull side as being a little TARDIS. That guy really stepped into the TARDIS, didn't he? So it allows you to plug multiple things into a single USB hub on your computer or whatever. It's like, you know, and it's like one of those things that you suspect the Japanese had a hand in because they're always making things like I swear to God, I saw the other day that in Japan you can buy a USB waffle iron. And it's like, well, why? Like, what is the point of that? I mean, there must be some larger reason.
And we already have people in the text box going, TARDIS, the thing, what the thing?
Yeah.
So there we go.
All right, let's see.
Next.
Next up, I'm reaching randomly.
A bar of gold.
The box of things from Think Geek. All right, Big Jim Willig, what might that be?
Oh. Oh, no effing way. Star Trek original USB communicator. So basically, this is the original flip-style communicator as used in the classic Star Trek series. As also a USB.
So is that another? So is
a
USB,
it's a USB
hub as well?
Plug and play Skype, MSN, and iChat enabled. You can actually use it as a communicator.
It actually will communicate. So
yes.
Wait a minute. So if we gave this to somebody like Ryan from the future, this guy who we had this listener on Monday, I think, from Portland, lives in London, happened to be in Zurich, I swear to God.
Like you do.
Walking around with like his iPhone or whatever, listening to the show live in Zurich over his magical iPhone, and then actually called us via Skype. And he's like, hey, I'm walking around Zurich place, like listening to your show. I thought I'd call and weigh in on something, blah, blah, blah. It was like, and it was like 12 hours ahead. So he is like full on like Ryan from the future.
Wow.
So he or somebody else could use that to actually communicate.
Exactly. It has a 6-foot USB cable. It's compatible with Windows XP Vista and Mac OS 10.5. And yeah, it's a speaker. He can use it as his Skype telephone device. It also makes 21 Star Trek sound effects.
Wow. All right. So
including the original cry of the red shirt, which is, Captain, I found something. Oh!
Yes, it is a USB communicator internet phone,
wow,
is what it is.
Right on.
So now, I think the deal is, after we put all these things on the table, I don't know if we should... I'm just trying to figure out the best way, if it's a thing where we like put them on the table and then say, you know, Don, any one of these fine items may be yours. Or if it's like we let the audience pick for you.
Well, so far with these two, I would feel terrible about taking either of these because these are such obvious.
That's
great,
only going to increase, by the way.
Great giveaway.
Yeah, get used to that feeling.
Okay.
All right. Here's the next. So this next up from the, and again, the whatever things here that don't go home with Don will be given away to you, the fine listeners of the Rick Emerson program. It's our way of saying thank you. Next up from thinkgeek.com. All right.
Let's
Big Jim.
Oh, again, with the Doctor Who, right?
Is that a sonic screwdriver?
It's the 11th Doctor's sonic screwdriver.
Okay, here's
not
the thing.
Not just any.
I don't know what any of that means.
Okay, that might be going home with me.
Basically, there's not just one Time Lord. There are many. They kind of like go Green Lantern style, like from one to another to
All
another.
Right. Okay.
Depending on, after a certain amount of time, it kind of gets passed. But you get one universal tool, which is the screwdriver. And you can do just about anything you want to with the sonic screwdriver.
I was a Christopher Eccleston fan myself.
I was gonna say, which was your favorite time?
Now, give me an example of, like, when you say it's a universal tool, like, of what the sonic screwdriver would do. Like, what can you do with it?
If you need to unlock a door, you need to fix something, you need to make something work, if some piece of electronic equipment is broken and it's really complicated, it's basically a MacGuffin device.
You can
point it at anything and go, fix now.
This is from the fine company Deus Ex Machina Limited.
Pretty much, yes.
Okay, I see. I understand what we're talking about now.
It has light and sound effects.
Uh-huh.
Spring-loaded extending action.
Tell me about it. The 11th Doctor, so is it chronological? Like one Doctor comes to the end of his life, or does he just retire?
In a sense, it's like... some of them die, some of them just kind of get like passed from one to another, depending on the situation. It's not kind of like a Dax Next Generation kind of a thing. It's more like a, I guess when the...
Well, you're a big nerd. Which I mean in the best way.
Hey, you, let's fight. Then there's fighting words.
No, I mean, you're among your own people here. You
of
found
course.
Your own kind, sir.
Jen, by the way, our friend Jen... married to Aaron Geekin City, Jen, says in the text box of the sonic screwdriver, already have one. It totally kicks ass. I keep it in my car.
Oh, okay. There you go. In case you'd like to foil a jacking of some kind or, all right.
In case of some kind of time travel emergency while she's in her car.
So this is a DEQ.
And so this is the sonic screwdriver as owned by the 11th Doctor.
Absolutely,
does each guy get a different tool, or do they all get a sonic screwdriver?
It all basically does the same thing, but each screwdriver is unique in its own almost Harry Potter-esque kind of way. Like
it's like a wand.
Exactly.
It's like Ollivander's wand, but yeah, it's like the
screwdriver itself cannot be really be as useful as it is without the hand of the Doctor, you know.
We are such retards because I was about to say, like, and like the wand, is it true that it only really works for the wand holder? Even if it's made of dragon string?
And we're all going, yeah, because that makes total sense.
All right.
Let's go to video arcade for this.
How many more items do we have?
And here's the thing, is like, I'm married, Dawn's married, you've got a girlfriend, and yet we're all sitting here talking, like, comparing wands and extendable screwdrivers for Doctor Who.
And all our significant others are just shit. shaking their heads.
We're on the last. They're such geeks. We're on the last item here.
Okay,
what's the last item? So the last item from the and here's the thing. I don't understand exactly why the size of the box of this final item from ThinkGeek.com. And again, we should thank our chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa for obtaining this. The final item in the box has, you know, it comes in its own box, and the box seems to be vastly disproportionate to the size of the ostensible item.
Well, that's always the case, really.
Well, I'm going to hand this to you.
Ooh.
So there
Whoa.
You go.
How fast can I get to the door?
So this is Is this the tricorder?
This is the original Star Trek.
The original tricorder from Star Trek.
As wielded by Spock, the science tricorder. Not the medical, but the science
tricorder.
That
was fairly small, though, wasn't it? Wasn't it a handheld device?
They were all kind of similar.
They wore it over, like, on a strap.
Oh, it was like a Marantz. Yeah. I see. Yeah. Okay, that's exactly what it was.
And it all had, like, a detachable cordless device that they would sort of use to wave.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Had one for medical. This is the one for science.
Yeah, and the little hand scanner is like Spock had. He held the thing, and then he had this little handheld thing that he would scan over things to get the information.
So you know what this is, and looking at it now, it actually a Marantz, by the way, is a Marantz is the radio folk, and maybe some reporters will know this. A Marantz is a recording device. It was basically just like a big ass tape recorder you would sling around your neck, and then you'd extend the microphone, which is obviously sort of the inspiration for this. So that's exactly what it is.
All four of these items are so awesome. I have no idea.
And just think, 75% of the things on this table from ThinkGeek will be given away to lucky listeners of the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Because my husband is an enormous geek, too, so there's this part of me that's also thinking, if I bring one of these home, which one will be the one he goes, dude, and gets so excited about?
Which is it? Which? Ooh.
Readings indicate a voice actor who was paid less than scale.
So let me hear your Nimoy right now. Just hit me with your Nimoy. Anything you can say.
That's just some guy who was walking by the studio as they were getting ready to, you know, to like seal the box up. Hey, come here and say this. So I don't even know how we're going to.
It's well balanced. It's two Star Trek, two.
I don't know how we're going to decide any of this. I mean, it's just mind boggling.
No.
Let's do this because I want to get this one other thing done because it's time sensitive. Let's get our snuff watch done. Okay. On the other side of the snuff watch, we'll.
And we also have a spot you need to do for Castalia.
Yes, we'll do the snuff watch and we'll talk to Jim about your show coming up again tomorrow. We'll just recap that. We'll talk about another one of our fine business partners, and then we'll figure out exactly what Dawn is taking home with her and what will be given away to you, the Rick Emerson faithful. Here's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do the Snuff Watch.
Here is your Snuff Watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's Dawn Taylor with your Snuff Watch.
Entertainer Eddie Fisher.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why that happened. Hold on a second. Not sure why that happened. All right, Eddie Fisher. Go ahead.
Entertainer Eddie Fisher, whose singing career was overshadowed by scandals of his marriages to Debbie Reynolds and Elizabeth Taylor, has died. He was 82. His daughter, Tricia Leigh Fisher, told the Associated Press that Fisher died Wednesday night of complications from hip surgery at a hospital in Berkeley.
What is it, the old people and hips? I mean, whether you're falling. I mean, he was just getting surgery on it. He'd survived the actual break. But it's like the hip in sort of its last moments of, you know, I will, and just throttled him.
From hell's mouth I stab at thee.
Hips go bad, man. Fisher sold millions of records in the 50s with hit songs including Thinking of You, Anytime, and Oh My Papa. His singing and good looks brought him a devoted following with teenage girls. He married movie darling Debbie Reynolds in 1955, and they were touted as America's favorite couple. Their daughter, Carrie Fisher, later became a film star herself.
I'm not familiar.
But amid sensational headlines, Fisher divorced Reynolds and married Elizabeth Taylor in 1959. Taylor dropped him a few years later when she fell in love with Richard Burton.
And the thing is, and it's just like such a tangled web, because so he's with Debbie Reynolds. Then he dumps Debbie Reynolds for Elizabeth Taylor, who he met because he was comforting her because her husband had just died in a plane crash.
And he was Mike Todd's best friend.
Yeah, and so, yeah, Mike Todd had snuffed it, and so he was, you know, let me console you with my penis. And then he claimed, and he wrote, I think, two or he's like Jamie Farr. He's one of those guys who wrote like 9 autobiographies, each of them like more self-serving than the last. At one point, he said that, like, you know, and the reason my career never got back on track is because I was busy cleaning up vomit, you know, because Liz was just hurling all over the house all the time. He kind of looked like Eddie Cochran, too. He had that kind of a look going on. So then he got dumped by Elizabeth Taylor. Then he married someone else. I think he had a fourth wife in there somewhere, and maybe a third wife, because I remember the last night I saw that there was a reference to wife number 5, who was like some Asian chick that was like 10 that he married. You know, just something like much younger than he was, like later on in his life. Anyway, so I think his last autobiography was apparently so bad that Carrie Fisher, and you got to figure at this point, you got to do a lot to really shock or horrify Carrie Fisher in terms of bad parenting skills, that she actually threatened to publicly change her last name to Reynolds if he did not recant everything he said in his autobiographies. He was apparently just like a bastard all the way to the end. So, you know.
Where was he on the Liz scale? Because I know she was running through guys like paper towels for a while.
Well, she was number 2.
He was number 3 because she'd married Nikki Hilton first, I believe, and then Mike Todd, and then
she married well, Richard Burton was several times, so that was later, right? Did she marry him twice? All right. Just to tell you just my final thought on this, just apropos of, I mean, it's tangential, I guess. Liz Taylor, we were talking about like Angela Lansbury or somebody the other day. You were saying that she was hot, like back when. And it's like, I can't really, I just see a picture because it's like my brain, I just get this like error message where I just can't picture it. But Liz Taylor is also like Rita Moreno, who's another woman we talked about, this where you only know them as like the old version of themselves. Yeah. And you kind of forget until you see West Side Story or whatever, how hot they were. Liz Taylor is one of those women that I constantly forget exactly how hot she was until you go back and you watch one of her films, or you see old newsreel footage or a still shot, and she was just like scorchingly hot.
I just finished reading this book about Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor's relationship, actually, and the first time they met, he saw her at a party, and she was, I think, 20, and it was his first big Hollywood party, and she was like laying on a lounge chair by the pool surrounded by people, and she was already just this huge movie star, and he really didn't know who she was because he'd come from Britain and the stage and stuff. But he said apparently he walked into the party, looked over, and she was so just insanely, stunningly, mind-bogglingly beautiful. He just started laughing because there was no other response to have.
Like that psychotic, like, I don't know what else to do.
And he didn't speak to her, and she apparently didn't like him, and because she found him boorish. But they didn't meet again until they made Cleopatra. He just saw her, and it was like, because she was just so beautiful, it was just beyond the realm of comprehension.
The pantheon of women who damnably existed before the advent of the home sex video is just endless. I mean, the number of female celebrities that shuffled off their mortar coil or just became really wrinkly before everybody became like legally required to upload naughty photos of themselves to the internet is just, I mean, Barbara Eden, I mean, you know, right
Loren.
There. Sophia Loren. I'd say
Tina Louise,
well done. Yeah, so I mean, and apparently Angela Lansbury and Betty White. Mm-hmm. There was a great Betty White.
There's still time, Betty. There's still time.
There was a great Betty White reference in the opening of The Office last night, right at the beginning, where the guy was talking about following somebody on Twitter. It was Michael had hired his nephew to work at the company, and it turned out that, you know, this is one of the guys that followed the nephew on Twitter, and he said, well, of course, he was the only person not busy tweeting about Betty White. It's all about damn Betty White these days. Of course, somebody he's not tweeting about Betty White, I'm going to follow him. I mean, come on. So, all right, there you go. There's your snuff watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. There is your snuff watch, and before we sort of wrap things up and before we find out what exciting item Dawn will be taking home with her, so we've got on the table the from Doctor Who, the 11th Doctor's sonic screwdriver. We've got a Star Trek tricorder. We have the Star Trek communicator, both in the original series, and we've got the Doctor Who TARDIS USB hub.
Hold on a second. Okay, so I have my husband on the phone.
Yes.
Okay, so I've got this box of stuff from ThinkGeek, and I can have one of the 4 items. Okay, are you ready? Okay, there's a classic science Star Trek tricorder. like Spock used to use, like, you know what I'm talking about, with his little scanny medical thing. Okay, there's a Doctor Who sonic screwdriver with light and sound effects. There's a Star Trek USB internet phone that looks like a classic communicator device, but you can actually use it as a phone on the, in the internet. And then there's a Doctor Who TARDIS USB hub with flashing lights and TARDIS sounds. Which do I choose?
We'll have the answer after this. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, so the upcoming revelation by Dawn Taylor about which item goes home with her is brought to you by Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at portlandspanish.com. That's the website, portlandspanish.com. Do you speak Spanish by chance?
Un poquito. Yo hablo un poquito español.
This is one of those things where I can't tell if you're screwing with me or if you've mastered a phrase just to tell people in another country, like, no, I don't have any money. My okay. family has money, though. They can get it to you by tomorrow.
The little girl. How much for the little girl? The women. I want to buy your women.
I am having an explosive sensation in my lower regions. Please do help. PortlandSpanish.com is where you can find out more about Castalia Language Center, as we've discussed innumerable times on this program. So if you're a kid, you know, kids just soak up languages just like sponges. I mean, they can just learn myriad things at once. You're an adult, your brain goes sluggish and soft and foldless, and it becomes a lot harder to learn anything. Castalia Language Center actually specializes in teaching Spanish to adults. The class sizes are limited to 8 people, which means you're going to get more individualized
or
attention.
Ocho.
That exactly. It's Ocho. Isn't that right, Don?
Ocho.
It is in fact, Ocho.
Ocho.
Has Patrick come to a decision? You
yes.
haven't said it yet. But is it? But he's.
Oh, you, yes. He came to.
Was it a joint decision, or did you hew to the man?
The thing is, I really am unable to decide on my own, so I believe that his choice was a good one.
Awesome. Should we vote and try and figure out which one
I want? I'm going to have my guess here in just one moment. So Castalia Language Center, they can, in addition to sponsoring segments in which we try to glean the conclusions drawn by the mind of Patrick. And I'm looking at the items, even I'm having a hard time figuring out what he guessed. They can, at Castalia Language Center, they can adjust to your schedule with different days, different times, and different levels of study. So whether you are a beginning Spanish student, whether you're taking an intermediary class, or whether you have an advanced degree of knowledge in Spanish, but you just want to polish it, you just want to make sure that you are up to snuff before you travel, before you move, or just because you like knowing things, you can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, that is how you find out more about Castalia Language Center. Located in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, and a proud sponsor of The Rick Emerson Show here on the Emerson News Network. All right, so on the table we have the Star Trek communicator, functions as an internet telephone. We have the TARDIS USB hub, and we're going to have photographs of all these things, by the way, up at rickemerson.com/pictures here in just a few, because whatever Don does not take home will be given away here on the show to you, the assembled minions. We've got the 11th Doctor sonic screwdriver from Doctor Who, and we've got the Star Trek tricorder from the original series. All right, Jim, just based on your knowledge of Don, the general vibe, and also just assessing these four items, what would you take?
Oh, well, I would go with the USB communicator, because not only is it versatile for what it is, but it also it has that classic Star Trek feel. The first time I got a flip phone or a phone that actually flipped open, that's the only way I used the phone. It was like, oh, finally, something for me, and something that for the nerd in me. But honestly, my vote for you, going back to the Christmas mentality, go for the biggest gift on the table. And it also happens to be one of the coolest, the classic science officer's tricorder. It's just, and it talks, it looks authentic. I'm just saying, that's my vote.
I'm saying, for me, this is just my, I don't even know what I would, I think if it was me, Jesus, I don't even know. I think I would have to go with the TARDIS USB hub if it was me, only because, even though I'm not like a big Doctor Who fan, because I know that it would impress people who came to my home, if only that ever happened. But theoretically speaking, in some alternate world where people entered my house, they would see that and they would say, my God, you're cool. And I'd say, yes, I am. And then I would act like it was no big deal, and I would just go back to doing whatever I was doing. Also, it's really
using
functional.
Your slap chop.
Right. Because just sitting alone in a corner, rocking back and forth and singing softly. But it's functional because it functions as a USB hub as well. I would be tempted to go with the communicator, except I don't think I would actually use it, because I've already got like a little headset at home for my godlike voice recognition software. So I'm going to guess, though, that would be what I would say. I'm guessing, though, that Dawn is going to go with, I'm just guessing that you guys are going to go with the TARDIS USB hub. That's my guess. Dawn Taylor?
Well, I'll tell you that I was leaning towards the TARDIS USB hub for all of the reasons you said. It is multifunctional, and it would make people jealous when they came to my house. But I will have to say that, Patrick, because I gave him the choice, we're going with the tricorder.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Let's see. There we go.
Is that the same thing it said last time?
No.
Okay.
That was something
similar. Wanted to make sure that there wasn't
There's three different buttons.
It wasn't like, you know, it was like Shatner had to knock off early that day or something, and they just, all they got was him saying sabotage, and that's it.
Hey, this is Krusty the Clown.
Have you heard Shatner talking about being on Twitter?
No.
Oh, you're going to right now.
I don't Twitter. I can't even remember my password name. So I have problems with electronics. And so what I've done is I've hired a young man out of college whose very fingers are the extension of computer keys, and he does the mechanics. But I very carefully modulate what I say and have used Twitter to publicize stuff, to have conversations, instigate competition. It's been a exploration in the immediate language of being
just saying words now.
And I have had a growing and glowing experience with Twitter.
Here's the thing about it. He's describing it like I would probably describe the sonic screwdriver. I don't really know what it does, but I get the feeling it's magical and that everybody likes it. And so I'm just speaking in vague sort of. I use it to interact in a variety of ways with objects, both inorganic and organic, and in a fashion that is exciting and groundbreaking. I don't know.
But a young boy out of college whose fingers are the very, you know,
extension of keys.
What does that mean? You're Captain Effing Kirk. You were at one point in time. You commanded a ship. Dude, you can't figure out Twitter. You can't figure out Twitter. You no, I'm sorry, that's it. You get stripped of punk rock points right there.
He's Big Jim Willig. You can see him emceeing and performing at the Shamrock as part of their open mic night, Southeast 4919 82nd Avenue. Starts at 9 p.m. Saturday. Sponsor limited, so get there early and spend lots of money while you're there. Drink uncontrollably. Drink from the minute you enter. Don't drink before that. You spend all your drinking dollars there at the Shamrock.
Absolutely, and the best part about that is you can do that and go home via public transportation because it is a TriMet hub damn near. You have 82nd and 72 plus a MAX station not too far away, so there's no excuse not to come down tomorrow night, 9 p.m., get there early.
Awesome.
And it's on 82nd. If you need, you could pick up a ride with one of the many pimps that apparently Nightline
ladies
found.
Ladies of the night.
Would you like to enter my fine automobile, sir? thank you for joining. You have to come back again and see you sometime.
Absolutely. So. You try and keep me away.
All right. Big Jim Willig, ladies and gentlefolk. All right. So because we're not going to be here tomorrow, except in a sort of figurative sense, happy birthday, Dawn Taylor.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday.
From all of us. Don't forget, after a brief musical interlude, today's Legion of News program encores, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. And throughout the weekend, we'll be playing those back-to-back along with some other interviews, musical performances, and whatever from the show's archives. Find out more at rickemerson.com. We want to thank our guests, including Mr. Big Jim Willig, who joined us today, and all the other guests from this week. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff and Obtainer of Things, Cheryl Kanako, our Chief of Staff. The Rick Emerson Show continues next after Legion of News and a musical interlude, and is made possible by a variety of fine folks, including yourself. So we thank you for listening. Without you, of course, there is no us, so we appreciate your fine patronage. It is Friday, September 24th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, have a good weekend. See you on Monday. Be safe. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.